This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
You're aimlessly scrolling down your social media and a video from your favorite beauty influencer pops up. She has just discovered the best moisturizer in town and can't wait to tell you all about it. If it works for her, it should definitely be good, no? Next, you see a video from the stand-up comedian who always makes you laugh. He's serious today. He wants to talk about the portfolio management firm that he trusts. Your favorite actress is being candid. She's sharing her secret parenting tip, the online course that is making her child smarter. You make a mental note of all these recommendations without even realizing that they probably are paid content, nothing more than an advertisement. It's not just the professional influencers who are doing it. Brands are roping in the who's who of the internet. Businessmen, artists, and even CXO level professionals who have huge following on social media because of their credibility in their profession are also doing promotional content. The Advertising Standard Council of India, a self-regulatory voluntary organization of the advertising industry in the country, has made it mandatory for influencers to label their promotional posts starting June 14th to ensure transparency and safeguard the interest of consumers. What does it mean for the industry? And more importantly, why should the consumers be aware of promotional posts? In this episode, we take a closer look at the world of social media influencers. From The Economic Times, I'm Rachita Prasad and you are listening to The Morning Brief. Let me introduce the three guests that we have today. First, we have with us Danish Seth, a digital content maker, anchor, and social media influencer who has over 1 million followers on Instagram alone. Danish and his many alter egos made people laugh and came as a huge respite during the pandemic. Our second guest, Lakshmi Balasubramanian, co-founder of influencer marketing firm Green Room. Her firm acts as a bridge between influencers and brands. And finally, from the Advertising Standard Council of India, General Secretary Manisha Kapoor. Manisha has been closely involved in forming these guidelines. Good morning and welcome to the podcast, Manisha, Lakshmi and Danish.
Good morning, Rachita.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Manisha, before we get into the discussion, first things first, tell us the highlights of the guidelines and what was the intent behind it. I mean, other industries in the media have been doing it, but why social media influencers? And what was the process you followed? And for the purpose of these guidelines, how do you define an influencer?
Yeah, so great questions to start off. And essentially, I think the need for these guidelines was felt because, you know, I mean, as we all know, digital marketing and digital marketing expenditure is growing very, very rapidly. Within that, the influencer and content creator segment is also growing extremely rapidly. So, you know, it's moving from what was, you know, one of the things that people did to pretty much becoming a mainstream element of marketing and advertising spending. Also, last year, you know, on account of the pandemic, we really saw an acceleration in the number of people who were watching digital media. And therefore, again, like I said, you know, this kind of communication became pretty much mainstream. And therefore, there was a need felt that, you know, one needed to look at it a little bit more carefully and make sure that consumers who were exposed to this kind of advertising and communication, you know, were kind of looking, were looking at this in a very fair manner.
So who are the influencers who will have to adhere to it? I mean, have you given a definition for it?
An influencer is someone who has an access to an audience and the power to affect their audience's purchase decisions or opinions about a product, service, brand, or experience because of the influencer's authority, knowledge, position, or relationship with their audience.
So Manisha, would I be right in saying that, you know, there are people who are influencers on social media and they are social media content creators, but there are also professionals from other fields like actors, musicians, and even, you know, like I said, CXOs. Would these people also be counted as influencers?
So for the purpose of this guideline, if they are promoting commercial content, then they will be counted as influencers.
Fair enough. Let's just take a step back. Danish, for many of us, you know, the world of influencers is still a mystery. I mean, we love you guys and we get entertained, but we really don't know how this world operates. Give us an insider's view. I mean, what are the sources of revenue and how important is paid content for influencers who are on social media?
Right. So just to give you an understanding how it works is, A, I work on my own content. That content is shared, the numbers go up, and then you're just hoping that among the people sharing it, it's also agencies, marketing firms, people in there are looking at it. And then what happens is, say there's a brand that's gone to them, they bring the brand to us. In most cases, sometimes the brands directly get in touch with us. And then it's a simple transaction. Now, the transaction can vary from, hey, I'll give you a pair of shoes, or I'll, you know, give you a sandwich. Can you please write about me too? I'll give you lots of money for you to go buy your own sandwich and shoes. So then it depends on what, you know, our preference is. Like, I have an absolute policy of a no-no to anything that is not monetary. I'm like, thank you, I can buy my own shoes, I don't need yours.
Fair enough.
You just go ahead, and then you go, you write a video which is in the zone of what you do. In fact, to be honest with you, I spend a lot of time myself educating this, you know, agencies and brands about working with the influencer's strength versus working with the idea they have in their head.
That's interesting.
Because you've come to me to sell a product for you. You know, you're coming into my world, and the million people who follow me, or, you know, the 50,000 people or 20,000 people, they follow me for what I do. They don't follow me for what you do.
That's interesting, because I've seen you selling everything from oil to cab services in your very peculiar style. But, you know, help me understand the revenue model in this space.
Right now, it's very arbitrary, in that sense that there is no real pay grade on this. It's not like, you know, you hit a certain level, then you charge so much. You hit a certain other level and you charge so much. It's not regularized. You can charge whatever you want. And if the client wants to pay you, then they'll pay you. It's as simple as saying that, you know, I charge an X amount to do a brand video. And my management will make sure that it is that ballpark and not anything less than that. I'm not charging them like 10 paise per follower that I have. It's not that. Of course, you then break it down. For example, on Instagram, it's broken down into, hey, one post is so much. One post plus one story is this much. If you're looking at all three social media platforms, that is Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and say the fourth one, YouTube, then it is so much. So it's essentially, you set a price to it like how you would if, say, for example, you're an actor, or if you're, you host events. There isn't really a salary that is determined, or there's no industry standard.
But Danish, do you make commitments about audience engagement? Because I see some of these promotional content with coupons or, something like that. What kind of commitments are there?
I'll tell you what. I did something recently for Kuber CoinSwitch. It's that wallet that lets you buy cryptocurrency, right?
Download CoinSwitch Kuber to buy and sell bitcoins and other cryptocurrencies. And use coupon code DS50 to get 50 rupees worth of free bitcoins.
So I did something with them where they had a coupon code which said DS50. And the moment a brand comes to me and tells me that, hey, listen, you need to get this much for us. Like, you know, can you, what are your numbers? I go straight into saying that the numbers have nothing to do with the engagement. If they're either interested or they're not. Because, like I mentioned, Rachita, to you yesterday while we were having a conversation, I've done radio for about 7 years. And I treat my audience with a lot of respect. And I think they're very intelligent in that sense. If they want to engage with something, they will. If they don't want to, they'll just move on. Right? So something like cryptocurrency, even if I'm giving away a 50 rupees voucher, if they don't want it, they don't want it. Now, I'm actually doing business with them again. They've come back again, which means that probably the engagement was good for them.
Right.
For the brand. And then it's left to the metric which is available with the brand. But there are agencies that sometimes after the aftermath of a post, they ask for numbers. Like I did something with Unacademy. And you know, it was perfect because I was at the IPL this year because I tour with RCB.
Yes, you're their mascot.
Something really cool happened. So there was a picture of mine that went viral during one of the games where the entire stand was cheering and I was the only one sitting down looking uninterested. Okay, it was a moment. I stood up like 10 seconds after that, but that's the picture that went out there, right? So I took that picture and I put it up on Instagram and I said, that's me every time an Unacademy ad shows up. Like, it's almost like, you know, like I'm thinking it's cricket, but it's not. So that's me when the Unacademy ad shows up. And it had over like some 2.5-3 lakh people who liked that picture. Now, that they wanted the data, I gave it to them. They were damn happy. They were like, oh my God, so much engagement. Now I don't know if people have read Unacademy and that's why I liked it or they've liked my picture. I don't know. There's no promise. I can tell you that I'll do the video and put it out there. I have realized that more often than not, when ad agencies and you know, these digital marketing agencies or social media agencies come up with ideas, mostly I'm not a fan of them. There are very few who come up with a good idea. But for example, when brands turn around and tell you, you have to do this, I try and tell them that, listen, yo, stop rubbing it in their face. They get it. If you show it to them once, they'll register it if it's nicely done.
I will come to what brands expect from you a little later, but let me speak to Lakshmi, because you're talking about agencies, how they connect influencers like you with brands. Lakshmi, what are the challenges you foresee in implementing these guidelines? And what do you have to say to Danish's accusation that agencies sometimes are not as creative as they should be?
Oh, I'll probably address Danish's accusation. He's probably right. It's sometimes the agencies, it's sometimes the brands. You know, they do try to kind of impose the brand philosophy a bit more than they should. Like Danish rightly said, why audiences follow influencers is because of their own original organic style, right? So if you try to change it, it's not going to work. Either it's going to sound too forced or very ad-like, which is not why influencer marketing works, or it's just not going to perform well. Either way, it's detrimental to the brand. But a good number of times, I mean, it kind of gets difficult to get the layers within the brand ecosystem to kind of understand this. And there are two kinds of influencers, right? There are these social media influencers who are fashion, beauty, and, you know, even actors, like film actors and TV actors. And there are people like Danish and, you know, a lot of others who are content creators. So content creators don't really need help at all. We just have to give them, you know, a large context. So to say, this is the product, this is what they want to say, these are your do's and don'ts. And they do a fantastic job, you know, to kind of deliver what's required in their own style. Of course, there'll be some back and forth, but largely we kind of, you know, what they give us works. But the creative is, I mean, at least as an agency, where we interfere or we give creatives is when there are non-creators we work with and, you know, they don't have the time or the bandwidth, or, you know, they usually work with the team and so on and so forth. We step in and give them and help them out with the creatives so that we kind of ease in the process and, you know, make it happen as per everybody's liking. With regards to the ASCII guidelines, I don't see too many challenges, honestly. Actually, from the last time to now, I think ASCII has done a pretty thorough job of trying to understand the ecosystem itself. So the largest requirement is to have a text declaration that says ad sponsored, or, you know, a couple of other hashtags that are options that we could add to the caption of a post.
But Lakshmi, the other thing is that in my interactions with influencers while doing research for this episode, there was one recurring theme. A lot of them said that brands don't want their promotional content to be identified as a promotional content or a paid content. Is that something you also get? Are they concerned about that? Do people expect to find a way around it despite the regulation?
Yeah, it does happen sometimes. So most of the larger brands do want to comply. They don't want to, you know, not follow a rule. Basically, the larger brands with a legal team in place and all of that, they do not want to really find a, you know, way around it. So in some cases where, you know, the creative is such that it's supposed to look really organic. Like, for example, if the brand is planning a teaser and a follow-up content, wherein the teaser is just somebody posing with, you know, posing or, you know, doing some certain action to create curiosity and interest. And a couple of days later, there's going to be follow-up content that announces a sale or whatever. Here, the first post is technically a material kind of, I mean, it is an influencer post, right? Paid influencer post. But brands here do not want the influencer to declare that it's a paid thing.
We spoke to some other influencers as well. Ankita Chawla, better known as Hustle Rani, who's a digital content creator herself, is now helping other content creators grow. She shares her views.
So, you know, having legality in this landscape is a good thing because now influencers have a certain ethical standard to live up to. And when brands reach out to them, they do not just have the responsibility of creating aesthetic content. Their responsibility goes way beyond that. They now need to create responsible content. They need to take care of the guidelines. Not just of ASCI, but each and every social media platform has its own unique policy. So there's a lot that these influencers now need to keep in mind before they put out any piece of branded content so as to make sure that they're upholding the consumer right of disclosing it to their audience that yes, they have received a certain monetary amount to talk about this very subject or product. So I feel the bad part of this entire situation is that who would be accountable and who exactly is this influencer police? How do you have that distinction? How do you discern that piece of branded content that influencer puts out? How do you backtrack that information? Like, do we now consider Instagram DMs as actual tangible proof that can be held in the court of law?
That's interesting. Manisha, Danish was talking about the sandwich and the shoes. I wanted to understand when you are saying that a content should be tagged as paid content, does it mean only those content where there is exchange of money that will be tagged as that? Because in a lot of instances, like Danish highlighted, there is a barter involved. And for example, a lot of food related influencers, they get hampers and they review it or they talk about it. They are getting something in exchange, but maybe not money. Would those also be have to tag?
Yes, absolutely. And which is why, we've put the term material connection and not monetary compensation. And this very clearly says that, it's a connection between an advertiser and influencer that may affect the weight or credibility of the representation. So, and we've clearly said that, it could include, everything from benefits, incentives, whether it's monetary or free products, without or with conditions attached, hotel stays, gifts, contests, all of them, point to a material connection between the advertiser and the influencer. However, there are a variety of disclosure labels available for you to kind of, disclose the nature of that relationship. So, everything does not have to be tagged and ad, but it could be partnership, it could be free gift, it could be collaboration. So, again, based on, I think, the feedback that we've got from a lot of influencers in our rounds of discussions.
I am Corporate Money, and today I'll talk to you about how to succeed in the corporate world. See, in the corporate world, what's most important is your relationship with your boss. Or you can just get some specialized skills using Upgrad and Moed in your career, but who needs that?
The other thing I wanted to understand from you is that who will actually monitor whether these guidelines are being adhered to? And how will it be monitored? And what happens in case of violations? Is there any option of penalizing these people? Because I don't understand how this will actually roll out in operation.
Sure. So, as you know, we have, a long history of looking at advertisements in a lot of other media, including digital. So, we have been monitoring. So we do a lot of self-monitoring as well, which is, ASCII has its own monitoring service, which is called the National Advertising Monitoring Service. And so now part of that is also going to look at influencer advertising. We've tied up with a technology partner, a French company called Reach. And they will be able to identify through that platform, ads or influencer posts that appear to be commercial in nature, but do not have the disclosures that are mandated by ASCII. So ASCII will do that monitoring. And from time to time, we may prioritize certain sectors, certain influencers, depending on what we want to kind of look at that particular point of time. So we will be in a position to do all of that. In terms of, what happens, should we find a violation? Typically, when we find a violation, we give the influencer, in this case, and the advertiser a chance to reply. So for example, something may appear commercial to us and maybe it is not in that particular instance. So we do want the influencer and advertiser to confirm to us whether there was a material connection or not. And if there was, then we will request them to kind of take down that post or to correct it. So that's what happens. Typically, we do not have penalties. It is, as you said, a self-regulatory system. However, what we find is powerful about self-regulation is that if there are enough people who choose to not be responsible, it kind of signals that the industry itself is not trustworthy. Then that becomes a less attractive option for brands that consider themselves responsible. And therefore, I think it is in the industry's own interest to put certain do's and don'ts for itself in terms of its behavior and its commitment to ethics and responsibility and transparency. And I think that's a larger price to pay. If as an influencer you get seen as someone who does not care for rules or someone who does not care for the trust of your audience, I think reputation is a much larger price to pay versus, let's say, even a penalty that we could impose. And so ASCII does not impose penalties, but we do feel that brands as well as influencers who are conscious of their reputation would by and large abide by these. If we have cases where there are repeated kind of non-compliances with our recommendations, we do work closely with the government, and then we could escalate it to the sector regulators, if we find that there is repeated non-compliance.
And in case there is a complaint regarding a particular ad, who's liable? Is it the content creator, or is it the brand which has advertised?
So both are responsible. The content creator, influencer, has the primary responsibility for disclosure. Although if they choose not to do it, the advertiser will also, need to kind of impress upon the influencer that that needs to be done. However, for content in the ad, so for example, if it is not about the disclosure, let's assume the disclosure is there, but there is something else that is misleading about the ad. Let's say someone says, this shampoo, for example, makes my hair 2x, nicer than the next shampoo. You may be called upon to prove that with some kind of studies or lab tests, etc. So that responsibility is primarily the advertisers. However, we have advised influencers that, they need to do their due diligence. If they are saying something, they need to be clear that it is something that the advertiser can substantiate, because at the end of the day, the audiences trust them. And, they do not want to become, speakers of what could be misleading or not true. And, that's in a sense detrimental, again, like I said, to their own reputation and to the trust that their audiences have on them. So influencers certainly also need to be careful about what they're saying. But the primary responsibility will be the advertisers.
Now I want to make this very clear that this video was not sponsored by Khadi or any other brand for that matter. Whatever I have spoken in this video or any of the previous videos of this series is my honest opinion. I'm not associated with any brand. No brand has paid me to speak all this. So I hope
that was the detailed disclaimer carried in a recent video by YouTuber Vivek Mittal, who goes by the name FitTuber. That's an interesting point. There's also a tightrope that influencers are walking, because your credibility matters. Your followers are there for your content. Danish, tell us what happens when a brand approaches you typically. You spoke about them offering you sandwiches and shoes, but how many of them are actually pushing for a barter and not ready to pay? And in terms of the content itself, you said that you have got bizarre requests. How is it handling them? Because at the end of it, from what it looks like, the onus is on you to maintain disclosures, and your credibility is at stake. So how does it work typically?
Luckily for me, I have a manager. Her name is Natasha, and she does a phenomenal job of speaking to brands. She picks the conversation first, and only when the numbers are agreed on in terms of the math, only then do I get on the call to sit down and understand from them what they want to do. More often than not, it's brands and things that you're aware of. Very rarely is it some strange product that we've never heard of. Then even before the commercials, I'm like, tell me what this company does first. I think that's very important to me.
And what are the bizarre requests that have come your way? Because I see some really odd combinations of influencers and products.
So once you kind of work with these brands, there are some very strange requests. Yeah, all of them want subtle. All of them want subtle ad. All of them want an ad where nobody knows it's a branded video, and then you're shoving, you know, a product in the audience's face like some 10 times. Right? So I tell them, listen, just own up. No, if you're selling it, sell it hard. No, go all in. Why are you, you know, holding back? If you're selling something, like you're selling a phone, just tell them you're selling a phone. It's fine. They'll get it. It's okay. It's normal for us to do it. It's normal for them to see an ad. It's okay. I remember I have a really funny story to tell you. I was doing an ad for KFC. And we had talk about some bucket chicken or something like that. And we sent in a script. And the client, for some reason, didn't get the script. And then, you know, it's also, see, influencers are so like microculture, right? Like, I mean, I probably represent what a lot of Bangalore people sound like. Somebody else sounds like, you know, represents what a lot of Bombay people are like. Somebody has like a really strong hold in, say, for example, some interior part of the north, which I can never penetrate through because my content doesn't reach out to them. A lot of my content is skewed to the south. Right now, again, in the south, there might be somebody doing Tamil content, there might be somebody doing Telugu content, and I don't expect these guys to follow me or know what I do. So I sent it to this guy. The client saw it. He didn't understand whatever was there. So then he called, and then we went on this call, and he said, oh, this joke is not funny. How do you do this joke? And then I went on this rant of saying how MBAs, you know, I was like, sir, please, I know you're from the agency. Take my word. MBAs have no idea what they're talking about. They're a bunch of, you know, just educated people with very little creativity, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a 75-year-old uncle sitting in an office approving a script of a 30-year-old male sitting in Bangalore. This is unfair. I've gone on this whole rant. And then he says, listen, I am that MBA guy. And I was so embarrassed. You know, it takes a certain amount of selling for them to see what you want them to see. But once they're convinced, then they're usually on board. And then life becomes a lot simpler.
That's interesting. I mean, and makes sense. I think this is something that happens in media as well. I mean, as far as ads go.
It's a lot of back selling. You know, I find myself doing more client servicing than creating content. And I'm okay doing it because, look, I'll tell you, it's a very collaborative process. I feel like there is no my way or the highway in this because A, you need the money, B, they need the sale.
That's an interesting way of putting it. And I guess that's something that Lakshmi would also be keeping in mind while reaching out to influencers.
Absolutely. See, I'll give you an example right now. I've worked with Lakshmi on a couple of brands. I think ID was one of them that we worked on. It's incredible because Lakshmi knows, A, the brand is selling a South Indian breakfast, and obviously I think the first, like, you know, in their line of thing is to sell that to the South Indian market. Hence they look at who are the people over here, and then people like Lakshmi, you know, suggest our name, then the brand comes on board, and then we work together. Now this is one way of doing it. Then there are some people who reach out ad hoc. Yeah, they just reach and they're like, come, let's do something. And I feel like by the time you explain to that guy what you do, why you do, you know, it's him and his team. I feel like brands sometimes have no idea what they're going for. They really don't know what they're going for. Like one of the, I did an ad for a cab company once where they said, hey, listen, so we need something subtle. I said, okay, what do you want? Tell me. See, you go down from your house and then one cab will arrive. On a selfie mode, before you're about to enter the cab driver will step out and sanitize it. He'll sanitize the cab. Then you get in and make a video saying, oh my God, I love this cab company. They're sanitizing the cab before I can get in. I kept trying to tell them that, listen, you morons, why will anybody enter a cab with a selfie camera on? Which normal person does something like that? And they said, no, it's subtle. I was like, it is not subtle. I will look like an idiot. You will look like an idiot. And they said, no, please do it our way. And I did it. And the reactions from the audience also was the same. Yeah. Whatever that comment section, the number of shares, the number of likes, all of that, because people are not stupid, right? You give them good content. And in the process, you kind of throw in one product. They're okay to see it and move on. And that's exactly how I do most of my sort of advertising or whatever, right? I convince brands to say, yo, listen, keep it straight. When you're selling, do a hard sell. But do it once and do it well.
Lakshmi, just one quick question. In your interactions with influencers, the smaller influencers who don't have access to agencies, would they have issue adhering to these guidelines? And also, what about influencers who are based out of India? Because a lot of influencers working on Indian content seem to be based in Dubai, US and Canada. How does it operate for them?
So the smaller influencers sometimes might, if they believe, like I said, we can't really ratify the fact, but they do believe that if they add a in-your-face kind of a declaration, they get lesser views and things like that. These are things we've heard from influencers. But having said that, I think they'll be okay to kind of disclose if that's, again, a rule. So if a brand wants them to, and if they're going to get paid for it, a good number of times if the brand tells them that that's part of the mandate, they almost always follow. And, unlike what Danish mentioned, right, a lot of times he puts his foot down and says no. Influencers who are smaller don't exactly have that kind of a choice, right? They end up doing it whether they like it or don't like it because they might not be making as much money and they're happy to make whatever little money. So if a brand or an agency in that sense kind of insists that it's part of the mandate, they will, go ahead and put out a declaration. And like Manisha ma'am rightly said, it's a lot of times the influencer's responsibility and it's their integrity in place. If you actually, scroll through, you can see it a lot on, in fact, even Danish's comments and a lot of times on regional content, people will actually call them out for, in fact, I've seen like a mom influencer who will advertise a product. She has actually declared also that, it's a paid sponsorship. Despite that, people will say, you have a child and you're promoting this. Do you think it's an ethical thing to kind of do? And things like that. So they're always answerable to their audience because, their 1 million or 2 million or 500K is because of the audience and they don't want. The moment their audience loses trust in them, they've kind of lost their credibility and their social standing, right? They're not an influencer, so to say, anymore.
Manisha, what are the small tips you could give consumers while they are going through their social media feed so that they don't get misled by influencers or brands?
Yeah, so I think one is for consumers, as you said, be more aware of their own rights and which I think, we do see a trend, and I think especially on digital media, you do see consumers kind of push back and be a little bit more assertive over what they feel is right or wrong. So that's a good thing. I think the second thing is for them to know that there is a mechanism, if they see something misleading, that there is a mechanism that can help them, figure that out and take corrective actions if required. So, ASCII has a WhatsApp number. It's as easy as taking a screenshot of what you've seen and sending it to ASCII. Our WhatsApp number is 77100123345. People can just send a WhatsApp. And then from there on, really, ASCII takes over the investigation of that complaint.
That sounds interesting. And that's a very relevant and important thing for consumers. Thank you so much, Manisha. Thank you so much, Lakshmi. And thank you, Danish. So great to have all three of you on this episode. And thanks for sharing your perspective. Thanks a lot. As advertisers move from traditional platforms to social media, the need for transparency has definitely increased. The ASCII guidelines, to that extent, is a good start to get more discipline amongst influencers and protect the consumers. The onus of adhering to the guidelines is on the influencers, and it is in their best interest to do so. I mean, in an industry where you are as big as the number of followers you have, you wouldn't want to lose your credibility for free sandwiches and shoes, as Danish mentioned. Consumers too need to keep their eyes and ears open, know their rights, and take action when they feel that they have been misled or cheated. That's all from us for today. I'm Rachita Prasad, and you've been listening to The Morning Brief. This episode was edited by Shashwat Mohanty and coordinated by Nehal Chalyawala. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. We look forward to your feedback. Write to us at themorningbrief@timesgroup.com. And if you like this episode, do share it on social media. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Thank you for listening and have a great day. All external sound clips in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credit mentioned in the description box.